It's just Google, so you can just click out of it.
It's gone.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, everybody.
Oh, nice to see everybody. Seems like we haven't met in a while.
September.
No. Yeah.
Hi, Dale. Hey, Terry, can you hear us?
Hear me all right?
Yeah. How are you?
Fine. Yeah, I'm just going with audio this time.
Okay.
Doing okay.
Good.
There's our chairman.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi, Sam.
Hi.
Hi.
Reagan, thank you for your favor the other day.
Oh, it's no problem. It just only takes about 5 minutes, so I'm okay with that.
Appreciate it.
So, Dale, aren't you impressed? I'm actually sitting down in an office.
That's nice. You're not gonna go to your cell phone?
No, I'm not gonna be a bobblehead.
Where's your cat?
What's that?
Where's your cat?
Well, locked out of that door.
I may have a whippet before the evening's over.
Yeah. Well, I have two kitties, so it's a little bit, and they kind of look alike.
Hi, Derek.
Hi.
Nice sweater. Is that a virtual sweater or is that your real sweater?
That's a real sweater. Although I'll take off the I love planning pin.
Oh, nice.
But you must have a bulldog.
It's a pug.
Or is it a pug? Oh, is sorry. That, my mistake.
Is that for the Georgia Bulldogs?
Sure.
So, Maria, do you think there's going to be a public hearing tonight?
Yes, I know the architect is already waiting.
And so I read aloud all 7 points of that procedure. Is that correct for public hearings?
Shoot, I don't have that in front of me.
So this is the time and place for reviewing land use planning, public hearing, and then I had 7 points, but I thought it was maybe just the opening paragraph.
Yeah, I think the main thing is to say something like that, then to read the planning action description on the agenda.
Okay.
And then to ask for ex parte contact site visits.
I don't think that's on my list. So you guys are going to have to be patient. Thank you for being a newbie. Okay. So how many do we have, almost everybody?
Yeah, I believe Piper said she was going to be here, right, Regan?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I heard from everyone except Terry and Dale.
And they're both
here. Terry and Dale are both here. So.
Piper. Hi, Piper. Okay, this is cool. I think we have a quorum.
Yeah.
So what time is it? Oh, it's 6 o'clock. Shall we be impressive and start at 6? I called the meeting to order and it's 6 o'clock. And the next item is to approve the minutes from September 8th, if you can remember. But fortunately, the paper is still existing for the minutes. Are there any comments, changes, or would someone like to move to approve them? And don't all speak at once.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
And is there a second? Oh, is there a second? Sorry.
Second.
Oh, sorry. Sam, second. And all those in favor, say aye.
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 Okay. Oh, I heard something like an animal. Anyway. Oh, and the Councillor Moran is here, I believe. Oh, we have to talk. The public forum is what now?
We don't have any requests.
I didn't think so. Okay. Yeah. So, Mr. Moran, if you want to make a report as council liaison, that would be great.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hi.
A couple things. It's been a while since we've met. A lot on the agenda last night at the city council meeting. One of the things that we got a look at was through Ms. Harris and Mr. Molnar with the planning community development focus was the first reading of the annexation code amendments, which came in front of the council. It largely was an issue that was raised to address the Land Use Board of Appeals pushback on a annexation approval for the Kendricks Enterprise property, which is about 17 acres right when you drive into town, right around, I guess the easiest way to think about it is near Butler Ford. If you head towards the Ashland entrance before you get to the railroad tracks. So it was very insightful. Maria did a great job with the questions outlining that a lot of councils had about how this gives clarity to the building process. Thought it was very interesting and hopefully will help us get some of these projects that are, you know, deemed appropriate approved so we can work on affordable housing and other issues. The other thing that came up, and I'm happy to announce, is that the will of the people prevailed, and we are continuing on the process to open the community center. There was a couple hitches along the way about stopping it and, you know, getting sidetracked. But we are in continuation mode into moving forward with you know, the ad hoc recommendations, approval and recommendations for getting the community center open. There will be, you know, further things that will be coming in front of the council and involving the community center as far as safety, engineering reports, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm happy to say that we are on track to get that building open. And as a representative of you in our town, I have been a fervent believer that that's exactly what the people want. They want the building open and usable. Pioneer Hall, as you probably well know, is open, has been open. And we have made a few strides on the community center. It looked like Sing Sing prison for a while. Let's say barbed wire fence, but there actually was barbed wire fence on it because I had to crawl over it. That's been taken down. The fencing's been taken down, and we're, you know, on the road to progress there. So, you know, up and forward. That's what we got to do. So, anyway.
Okay. Are there any questions from the Historic Commission for Ms. Oh, are you talking, Sam?
Oh, Sam, you're muted.
Has Sam got his audio on yet?
Now I do. Some way I was muted.
That's okay.
My question was, so is the lease a dead issue? That scared me that a private individual would be controlling that property for 20 years. So is that now a done, gone thing?
Thanks, Sam, for the question. Yes, the council voted last night to move forward with not considering that recommendation, but moving forward with the ad hoc recommendation as previously outlined and approved by the council to put the necessary steps in place to get the building open. So, yes.
That's great.
Yeah, I think it's good. Well, hey, look at everyone. There's always people with difference of opinion. I think it's appreciated. A lot of this stuff has gotten very, very political, unfortunately, which is delayed progress. Again, the people of Ashland wanted open, and that was loud and clear. We must have gotten over 50 emails from people saying, don't do it. I was happy to see the response. We decided as a council to not go down that route. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that would have to happen, from zoning issues to parking surveys. You know, everyone, I think, is in agreement from the council that they want the building safe. They want the buildings accessible. And they've already been closed for 3 years, roughly. So, you know, long enough to just kind of let's move forward and get them open and usable for the public, community building to be used by the community.
Great. Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, is Terry there?
Yes.
Hi, Terry. Yes, I think we can hear you.
Oh, okay. I got to speak up. But anyway, okay. Pat, thank you for doing that.
You're thanking the council. Mr. Moran?
I didn't do a thing. I just did what you guys elected me to do, and that's speak truth to power, and that's what I did. So yeah. I'll continue to do that as well.
Sounds good.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you for your report. Now we go to the planning action review, which is where I think I go to the procedure for the hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, do we first invite the people to on screen, or shall we go ahead?
No, first you do your intro, you do the staff report, and then you open the public hearing, and the applicant can speak, and anybody else who wishes to speak can speak.
Right, that's exactly what the procedure says here. So. I opened by saying this is the time and place for the Historic Commission review portion of the land use public hearing. If you wish to speak at the hearing, please keep your comments and testimony limited in scope to issues, comments, or concerns pertaining to the historic district design standards. So, as Maria just said, the public hearing is open to all those who want to give testimony regarding this application. And you just give your name, address, and make your statement. And then the staff will present its report on the recommended actions. And then the commissioners will have the opportunity to ask staff questions. After the staff report and answering questions, the applicant and the applicant's representative will have So that's together, we'll have 15 minutes to present the proposal, as I understand it, right? And the commissioners may ask questions of the applicant without affecting their 15-minute allocation. Other members of the audience will be allowed to speak, but they would be limited to 5 minutes each, and they also would need to state your name, address for the record, and give your testimony. Then the staff will be given an opportunity to respond to any questions the commissioners are on any matter which has been raised. And finally, there is 5 minutes for the applicant to have a rebuttal, after which the public hearing will be closed. And then the commissioners will go into deliberation and work, maybe make a motion one way or the other. Then I think I should read what the planning action is. It's the property 101 A Street. The owner is Blue Marble or Jordan Willing. The applicant is Chris Brown, architect from Architect Design and Architecture. Sorry. And then a request for the site design review approval to permit a remodel and an 8,159 square foot addition to the building at 101 A Street. Proposed amendments include re-roofing, constructing a new rooftop addition and solar array, and replacing rooftop mechanical equipment, installing new exterior stairs, exterior windows, awnings, and a dormer, constructing interior second floor space, installing a parking area gate to regulate access, and adding new plaza space with seating. And it's employment zoning E1 with historic residential and detail site review overlays, map 39. And well, you can see the tax lot and all that stuff. So we began then by asking those who want to speak on behalf of this. Who's got the cat? It's not mine, finally. But he sounds worse than mine. So anyway,
I think the first step now, Beverly, is the commissioners need to go around and say whether they did site visits and or had experts.
Oh, that was the one I forgot because it's not on here. Yeah. Yes, whether there's been any ex parte. Yes.
Or site visits, usually.
Or site visits. So you guys have been, know that drill. Anybody have anything to that would cause them to withdraw from the conversation? Oh,
I've only been talking to my cat.
Oh, that's your cat. You're the guy. Okay. So hearing none, then do we go to the staff?
Yeah, staff report. And actually, Derek Severson, the senior planner, is here. He's the project planner on this, and he's going to give the staff report.
Welcome, Derek. Thank you. Sorry, I thought you had a different dog than a pug. Okay.
Eric, you're muted.
Okay. Just to start off, orienting you to the property is at 101 A Street and also addressed as 340 Oak off of the frontage here is at the corner of Oak and A, and extends several blocks along A Street down into the railroad district. The existing building is on this long, narrow portion, and then parking is here. And it's the Ashland Fruit and Produce Association warehouse building. The proposal, as the chair mentioned, is a remodel and an 8,159 square foot addition. And it does include a rooftop addition on the southeast building, re-roofing the existing structures, installing solar arrays, replacing the existing rooftop mechanical, a new exterior stair to allow egress from the building, new exterior windows, new awning cover on the southeast building, a new dormer facing the tracks on the northwest building, interior work to create second floor spaces in the southeast and northwest buildings, and then site work, including landscaping, sidewalk paving around the new stairs, relocating the bike parking, removing and replacing parking area tree, and then creating a new small plaza space with benches and landscaping to improve the pedestrian experience, as well as adding a gate boom arm to regulate access to the parking lot and relocating some electrical equipment. But with all of that, the applicants aren't proposing any new uses or activities on the site. It would continue to be 100% office, won't increase the number of users or intensify or expand the current uses. I was just going to go through quickly and orient you to the components of the exterior changes, but really leaving the details of that to the applicants to explain, because I think they can do a much better job of explaining their design. So this is the existing A Street facade, as I think we're all familiar with. You can see the existing illustrated here. And again, a rooftop addition is proposed on this section, new stairs, new storefront windows along the sidewalk here, and new windows on this upper level, replacing the awning cover here, and then re-roofing and new solar panels there. And then further down to this end toward Oak Street, there's an existing window and door here, which I believe was Cosmic Pizza when this originally converted to A Street Marketplace. And they're proposing to replace that door and just have a window in that location. And then this is that same section as viewed from the parking lot. You see the end of the building, the current placement of bicycle parking, the sort of what's described in the application as the exoskeleton of the building that was done when this was converted to A Street Marketplace. And as proposed, and again, this is the existing rendering of the building, and then proposing to add the stairway structure and rooftop addition, as well as replacing this metal siding and a new door there. And this gives you just a little more detail, and you can see how it relates to the height of the clock tower, and how it is not, the addition isn't the full width of the building. And then in terms of the railroad track side of the building, this is looking from the railroad tracks where they meet Oak Street. This is the Oak Street facade, the front of the building, and the existing condition along the tracks. And that dormer proposed would replace this window here facing the tracks. So this is the, again, the front of that building, and that existing window being replaced with a window and dormer here. And then down on the end where that addition and new stairs are happening, as they're creating that interior second floor space, they're proposing to add a number of new windows along that track side of the building. And again, this is the front of the building, no changes proposed along the Oak Street facade. However, you can see sort of how that addition presents from this end, as well as how it relates to the height of the clock tower. And you do have in your packets a cross-section illustrating the proposed treatment of the building, as well as a material palette, again, illustrating the changes to the exterior of the building and sort of the material treatment proposed. And then in terms of that plaza space, this is the new stairway and the area that currently has bicycle parking and some electrical infrastructure. The electrical infrastructure will be relocated, some benches installed, new plaza space, the bicycle parking relocated away from where the stairs are going, and picnic table placed here to create a little exterior plaza space and a little better pedestrian exterior experience for employees or visitors. And then, again, this is just sort of a comparison of the two. That's really all I have. Again, I wanted to sort of orient you to what's proposed and what's going on, what's there now, and leave it to the applicant, Christopher Brown from Architect, to really get into detail on the specifics of the proposal. But I'm happy to answer questions if I can.
I have a question. On that window that's going to be window and door, what's going to happen with that as far as where the door was?
And I did not get a good photo of that, but I believe there's a similar treatment on this area here. So it's wood infill where the door was, to sort of match what I believe is in place further down the building.
Okay.
But Christopher Brown could definitely speak in more detail to that.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Derek. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And now then, is there any more you want to add, Maria, to that report?
No, not at all. I just am calling in the applicant's representative,
okay,
Christopher Brown, so he can do that or it looks like a group there can do their presentation.
Oh, good.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having us here today. I'm Chris Brown, Ian White, and Paul Turner from our office. So we've all been working on this project over the last several months, and happy to address any questions you might have. I think primarily as we approached this project, we really looked at the opportunity here as an adaptive reuse of a building. I think that's really a landmark feature of the Railroad District here in Ashland. And we see this as a wonderful opportunity, I think, to be a part of this process, kind of bringing a new future, if you will, to this building as well, and revitalizing the A Street corridor. I believe I do have privileges here to share my screen. I'm going to go ahead and do so. Ian and Paul have both been working on this project, and I think Ian could perhaps give a little brief summary of some of the context here historically of the site, if that's helpful, or if I don't want to reiterate anything that's already been done. So feel free.
You probably heard the staff report, though, didn't you, Chris?
Yes, we did. We saw.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I think since we haven't heard from Ian and Paul since September, it would be helpful to have a refresher.
Okay, great.
Right. Really just wanted to start with the context, but I think we're all pretty familiar with the site. I think based on our meeting in September, some of the questions that we wanted to address were, what is this addition, or how is this addition going to change that streetscape, that existing A Street streetscape? So if we look at photos number 3 and 4, kind of wanted to do a kind of a direct comparison between what's existing and what's proposed, just to give context on what that's going to look like and what it's going to feel like as you're walking down that street. So these are our renderings of what that streetscape is going to look like. This was standing right in front of 420 Blackbirds. And this is the view from right across the street from A Street, or from the hardware store.
Okay.
Likewise, we're kind of making that approach along A Street towards the building. And I think what you'll notice, since we last presented and had that conversation in September, the inner portion of this in has been filled in. Before, there was an open space right there that has now been more. And then going along with that, the exterior stair, we extend that up to the third floor for egress. And I think we had kind of prefaced that at that as well.
Mm-hmm.
The next change that maybe we didn't see visual, or we didn't present to you visually, was the solar panels. So we can maybe focus in on that. Really, we're looking at sustainability of this building, and you know, there are huge power demands on a building like this. So anything we can do to offset. Offset that electricity use and make this building sustainable. So we're seeing solar panels on the upper roof of the addition, the existing metal roof down below, and on the clock tower section of the building.
Okay.
I can chime in about our design of this facade and how we sort of work within the language of the existing material palette and the window openings. I think it was real important to make this new addition kind of stand out as a modern addition contrasting with the historic building. But in doing so, we're using all the materials that are within that language. So then looking at these solar arrays on the south side of the building, we're going to be able to capture that south sunlight. And let's see. Up here, I think this was important to keep the proportions of this new addition similar to the existing building, and not doing too much up there to where it becomes a sort of a main eye attractor. It was important for us to sort of keep that setback from all sides of the building here. And so you can sort of see the cascading, which is a pretty important factor of this building. You can see it sort of telescopes down the streetscape, and it's sort of telescoping upward as well. And then in terms of this new awning, it's really minimal. We're just adding a new fabric to it, and we proposed blue for blue marble. Seems fitting. And yeah, I think working with the sort of rhythms of what's already there, I mean, this is a pretty complex facade we're looking at. So we didn't want to add any more additional, you know, design motifs to this. So as you can see, we're sort of using the full sizings up here on the new addition level. And then, like I said, staying within that existing material palette.
I think the proportion and scale is also important to note in relationship to the existing clock tower. I think we really saw it as you see that elevation here, kind of Paul mentioned on the parking lot side, if you will, really looking at a departure point from the height of the clock tower to the eave of the proposed addition, so that we are working with a relative form and balance proportionally with both the existing and the new proposed structure. The dormer that Derek mentioned, this is on the railroad side of the building. And again, it's looking at how we can bring in additional natural light into some of the space there. This is a section we have consulted with a structural engineer in that regard, and just looking at how we can essentially maintain a lot of the interior character of the building. We're keeping all the original trusses and actually trying to expose what we term the geology of the building, if you will. We're trying to strip out a lot of the finishes that were previously brought in when Plexus took over the building and try to return to more of the historical character of the interior experience as well in the building. We feel like that's a real asset to the space. And this is the infill at the door. I believe Terry was asking about how that was being treated, and we're just proposing to match the wood infill as similarly done further up the street.
Yeah, that looks good.
This is the materials palette we're proposing. We are trying to keep, again, as Paul mentioned, as much of the exterior facade in place, and really just looking at replacing this kind of burgundy awning that's currently out there with a more of a royal blue awning to align with the company motif and vision. Solar panels, again, trying to maximize as much as possible the solar panels, and also replacing all of the mechanical equipment. It has reached its lifespan. It's 25 years plus old and will need to be replaced with more modern HVAC equipment there to allow for efficiency and comfortability in the space. We are looking at a perforated metal guardrail system for this exterior staircase. We do feel like it works well with this sort of constructivist approach of the facade here, and then working with a black aluminum anodized glazing system for the new proposed addition. And then this, let me see if I can rotate the view here of this. And again, in terms of just scale and really looking, I know Derek shared this section in his presentation as well, but we do feel that scale is very important in terms of the experience on the A Street walkway there along the sidewalk. And so really working with that stepped facade to work with scale and massing here, not overwhelm the pedestrian experience on A Street.
Anything else you'd like to add, Chris?
I think that covers the historical context of the project. Again, we always find these adaptive reuse projects very intriguing from an architectural sense. I think how we can bring a and preserve a building's history and also kind of adapt it into the current day use. And we are excited to see that building, I think, revitalized again.
Yeah.
Its use on the A Street corridor.
Well, thank you for that presentation. And this is now the time to ask. Oh, does the staff want to respond, or can I open it to questions now? Derek, do you have anything to add? Or
no? I don't really have anything to add. I mean, I think on the staff side, we're really looking for just the commission's take on particularly the issues that Christopher raised in terms of whether the efforts to step back the facade and have that addition on the roof sort of telescope up is works in the eyes of the commission for dealing with the historic district standards. So that's, I think, really what we were looking for.
And well, as a layperson, I think it looks great. Like that's, I'm not an architect. Maria.
Yeah. So just to let you know, we don't have anyone else attending. So, and we haven't received any other requests to speak. So as far as that goes, there's no more other people to bring in.
Good. Okay. Thank you. So is this point we can make sure the Historic Commission has an opportunity to question anymore, right? And then we can deliberate?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any of you have any questions?
Bill, I think you're muted.
Yeah.
I don't have any questions. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh. It's Bill, I think.
Am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Oh, good. I think I muted for the kitty. It was very vocal. We have a geriatric kitty visiting us. But anyway, my concern, I really liked the original proposal. And that original proposal had two cupolas on top of the building. And they have merged them together and have expanded it. So it's a relatively large third story addition. I really liked what they had done previously, and I can understand why they would have expanded that. But visually, looking at it, looking from the south to the north, as you look at it, it becomes pretty massive. Previously, it was broken up and smaller, and it's not a deal breaker for me, but I really felt like the original proposal was much better.
Does the applicant want to respond?
I agree with you, Bill. I just said the same thing here. We really loved the first approach to the structure. Unfortunately, as we've been going through budgeting considerations and what it would take to effectively build two structures on the roof compared to one. It just made sense from an efficiency standpoint to connect the two and sort of shift that deck and landing over to the east side, if you will.
Yeah.
But I agree. We did really connect with the proportions and the scale of the first proposal as well.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big issue, but it wouldn't prevent me from saying yes, because I think that the use of the building, you know, it's a good use of the building, and I feel like the marble from, for example, I buy blue marble toys for my kids, and I think they're doing a good job. So anyway, it wouldn't prevent me from saying yes, but I do think it's the current proposal is not as good as what was originally proposed.
Thank you. Yes, Dale.
So I'd like to just chime in because I was thinking a lot of those same ideas that Bill just talked about. Chris, do you have access to the last elevation? I don't have my packet that would show that. Do you have visual access to what it used to look like? Because I noticed differences too, and I wasn't able to compare them.
Yeah, let me share my screen here. We'll pull it right up. Can everyone see okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that looks better.
So here's the previous application as presented with the break.
And do you have an elevation of that too?
Mm-hmm. And so you can see the proportions weren't exactly symmetrical. We sort of had a 60-40, if you will. We have the elevator here and then the open deck across the middle. Originally in this scheme, what we were proposing was almost a mechanized roof structure that would extend out beyond and sort of enclose this deck area if it needed to be in adverse weather or something along those lines. But it really, as I said, the design concept became kind of a victim of budgetary concerns there in terms of construction cost.
Go ahead, Bill.
I see it as like when we look at the building historically, industrial buildings have cupolas on top to bring light into the interior. And the original proposal really kind of fit that theme. But now we have a much more massive single cupola on top, and it doesn't, it's aesthetically, it's not as good. I wouldn't vote against it, but it's, I just feel like the original proposal was much better.
And I understand Chris to be saying he agrees with you and that this is driven by serving the client and the cost involved. Is that right, Chris?
That's correct, Beverly. Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, Bill, do you think it's definitely more of a solid mass across, but it's all still glass? And
could you say that again, Beverly?
Sorry. I was actually going to ask a question about how much this, will there be additional natural light as a benefit of this change, possibly?
Yes, there will. I think what we're seeing happen with that, it's still functioning essentially as a cupola.
Right.
as you said, Bill, to help bring natural light down through the subsequent floors of the space. I think primarily really looking at this area as an opportunity to, you know, we do actually have a climbing wall as well along this inside face that extends through all three floors. So that really is an intended feature of the construction, if you will. It's, again, it's just the economic means of essentially right. two buildings up on top of the structure versus one.
Can you show the floor plan of that upper story?
Yes. Let me see. Or could we skip it?
It's farther down. Yeah, we have to actually sheet it out.
Is it back in the elevations now? There we go. Thank you. So here's the third floor as it stands right now. We're essentially have this as open office space, stair core, an elevator in the corner, and then open deck at the east.
So how if so? There's no openings to the lower story.
This is an open stair core all the way through.
But just that center section, really.
Yes.
That stairwell.
Yes.
So when you're describing it as a clear story and adding light to the building, it doesn't look like it's really adding light. Or am I not seeing that?
This would be the main transference of the light through that stair core.
Right. And so for that.
Like for me, I don't see it as so much the light transference, but kind of the image of a clear story, like how we would see that from the outside.
Right. I agree, Bill. I was just trying to understand the rest of the picture. I totally agree with what you what your thoughts are on it, but they also were describing it as a clear story to bring light into the building. And I think, you know, that may be a mitigating factor, but I don't really see much light. I mean, there isn't much light coming in there for the scale of third story.
Yeah. Well, another mitigating factor for me is that they're adding a lot of solar to the building.
Right. So the other comment I would have on the same subject that you're raising, Bill, is that when it was broken into two, you know, the two sections just added a little softer scale. It makes it feel less big up there. So the scale is definitely bigger compared to what's proposed now. And then in terms of, it sounded like telescoping the building up to me is really too much up. I don't think it needs any more up. A clear story, if we could call it a clear story, you know, would be lower in scale.
Yes, of course.
Right. So telescoping up and then also from a perspective, I think it's really kind of an eye attraction because of the height and the mass of it. When you showed the perspectives coming down A Street from the hardware store, you see the whole thing, and it seems to be pretty prominent. Not what I would call a clear story. I don't mean to keep harping on that, but it does feel rather massive in scale and proportionally to the building.
I think I would describe it more as a lantern. I feel like that's more of a fitting terminology for it, an architectural lantern,
which okay.
you see more often as a, I think, form defined as an actual story on top of a roof structure such as this. So, uh-huh.
Yeah, but would you, I think we view it in terms of how things were done historically, mm-hmm. and the idea of a clear story is, or a cupola, is much more in line with what we see historically.
So, as again, can I just ask that the experts on this, would is since the mass of the third floor is a concern, the size, if it was less square feet on top, would that be less of a problem? Or is, how would you?
Well, I have concerns about it, but I still wouldn't vote against it because I think it's a good use of the building.
And Dale, your concern from looking from A Street is that it's too prominent?
Yeah, I think in all three of those perspectives that's on the screen, it's fairly dominant. I mean, I like the idea of a lantern, you know, it's whatever that means is of course individual, but I think I see more of it as scale and it doesn't need to be a cupola. And I appreciate all the incredible drawings and perspectives because it's so easy to see what's being done. So I want to thank you for that. And I appreciate it also the pre-app, which was very well done too.
Right.
So it's really about scale for me. And then, I think you talked about having aluminum, bright aluminum on the storefront last time. And I think that moving to a black aluminum is great. The other thing where I noticed it is if you could put up HC6 on your screen. So what's the plate height? It appears that plate height is like I'm guessing like 12 feet or so. From where they're standing in the upper story?
From where they're standing, I believe it's 10 feet. You're seeing a foot up to a foot of floor structure here and another foot and a half of roof. This plate height at the floor below.
Right. So yeah. The other thing I would think would be that floor level would kind of be at the plate height of the two-story part, which there's probably structural reasons for that. Mm-hmm. But then I'm thinking this building's only 20 feet wide and have 10-foot plates, and they sure look a lot taller than 10. They look more like 11 or something. I guess it could be calculated, but based on the size of the people there, that when it's only 20 feet wide, could it be 8-foot plate heights instead of 10, mitigating some of the scale and telescoping and eye-catching in my mind, is eye-catching is great, but scale is the other part of it.
And it absolutely could. I think if we sought to lower that roof structure, we could lower it. I think our opportunity here, obviously, we're just seeking to provide, I think, that height inside of the space and not feel that you're inside an 8-foot variance. You know, it's an 8-foot with a vault, but I think I would like to propose a compromise if we could at 9 feet, if that's acceptable, or 8-foot still possibly.
So I would say probably an 8-foot on the A Street side, but allow it to be vaulted to whatever you wanted on the railroad track, the north side, to maximize the view.
Go
ahead.
Chris, go ahead. You want to respond to Bill's latest?
I think Bill hit it right on the head that the intent really is to maximize that view shed to the north of the hill. Yes, not to necessarily.
So could we keep the plate height to an absolute minimum on the A Street side and allow it to go wherever it wants on the north side?
I think our concern would be that we lose symmetry in the elevation. I feel like this is a very important elevation too.
So where do you see that from? Only from the hardware store?
And I think you also see it as you travel west on A Street.
Throw all three of the, there they are.
Yeah, you would see that form, I believe, expressed as you come down through A Street. But, you can see the elevator shaft up protruding through the space. I think that's something that we would look at as a limiting factor for height, but I really have no concern if we need to bring this down. We would absolutely, that's why we're here, to really work with the committee and find what feels appropriate here.
You know, when I look at that elevation and I see that awning, about door height, and I don't know if those are 8-foot doors on the street level, but that feels, from the edge of the awning down, feels much shorter than what's above. And I just think that a couple of feet off of that could make a huge difference in terms of scale and mass. And, a 20-foot wide building, to look up 10 feet from the middle up to 8 feet is still a pretty dramatic view. There's nothing above any of that. You're at such a high vantage point that's when you're standing. When you're sitting, you're going to have a huge sky angle, and really from both sides. So I don't think it's going to diminish the space in terms of use, in terms of feeling open. All glass is going to be quite dramatic too.
Still, I think it looks pretty good when you get more of a close up and you zoom in and just look at the building by itself. I think that looks good.
Looks what looks good?
Yeah.
The third story, it's a lot of glass, but I don't know if you put some solid panels in, I don't think that would help.
Well, nobody's asking for solid panels, but where that 8-foot blue, red line is drawn, and thank you for that, Chris. It's so incredible to see this, that would be the height of the windows and the addition, and it would be less massive sitting on top of the building. It's great that it's set back from the building, and that helps a lot, but it's still a very visible, massive scale. And I think the 8-foot would make a huge difference.
Yes, Bill, go ahead.
Oh, just the fact that we have this 10-foot plate height. If we can bring it down to 8-foot, that mitigates a lot of the problem that I see with the merging of the cupolas. I felt like we had a very, very good first design, and I'm not so excited about the current design, but bringing the plate height down would really help a lot.
So both Dale and Bill, I guess you're saying that the concern with the prominence, the size and scale, if we brought I never know the right words, but brought the current drawing from 10 feet to 8 foot, that would be much more to scale. And Dale, did you want to ask, would that make a difference in how you're looking at the awning?
Yeah, I agree with what, I think I'm only looking at for scale in terms of thinking how high that is, 7 or 8 feet, whatever it is. But I just proportionally, from every perspective, and especially this one, it just looks too massive on top. And so I think lowering it to 8 would be great. And keeping it symmetrically gabled is, I think, important.
I think you're right that it looks top heavy.
And I don't think that the occupants are going to have any problem with that.
And Chris, I heard you saying you wouldn't have a problem with making that change. Is that correct?
No, I think that would be fine. I don't see. The only concern I have is the relationship of our elevator shaft into space.
Yeah.
And so as we vault that, I would just ask that if we could lower that roof height to the max permitted by that elevator, because we do need to provide ADA access up to that third floor. And that would be my only concern.
What if the elevator penetrated the roof?
Exactly what I was thinking, Bill. Yeah. If it was too high and it penetrated the roof by a little bit, but it only had a little bit of extra detail. Yeah. It takes some solar panels away.
Right. It's actually adding an architectural feature.
Chimney like.
Yeah.
What kind of light?
Chimney like.
Oh, chimney light. I don't know. How does the designers feel about that?
I think it would be interesting. I think our main concern is just efficiency, but
yeah. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
I just would say we would do our best to meet, I think, the recommendations of the commission.
Okay. And so go ahead. Who else wants to talk?
This is Terry. So what would be the final plan then? But you said about lowering it. What would be the new measurements? The height.
Let's take a look. I believe we'd be bringing this bearing plate down to 35 feet, and then I think in terms of our we have our maximum height listed on our elevation. There you go. So we would basically be bringing that down to 36 feet as our building height, top of ridge, if you will.
And what is it now?
Right now it's at 38 feet.
So we're talking 2 feet then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, so that, go ahead.
Yeah, that would help.
How high is the clock tower?
The clock tower is 34.6.
Okay. That's nice. So it's still lower. I think that's important that they stair step down as you view across. So that's good.
So I know the commission was very positive about this project last time, and I hear the same appreciation for design here. So is there somebody wants to make a motion about recommending this project with what conditions, if there are any?
So Beverly, before you move on to that, you probably need to close the public hearing.
Oh, okay. So I should ask then if the applicants have anything else they might want to add, or you feel comfortable with what we've talked about?
Absolutely. Yep. And thank you for the insight, and we appreciate it always, the collaboration here with the commission. So thank you all.
Well, thank you. It really was an impressive presentation for all the drawings. It was really good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And, so Maria, we can just move into deliberations.
Yeah.
And that is where, if there's further discussion.
The commission can deliberate and then come up with your recommendation.
Right. I thought it was a big step for them to make that change. And I think it helps scale a lot from what you were saying, right? Bill and Dale. And do we have to recommend anything for the elevator beyond the 2 foot reduction in height? Is there any other recommendation needed?
I think they'll deal with the impact of the elevator.
I think so too. Well, they don't have an option, but with ADA requirements, right?
Yeah.
Or as a mechanical requirements.
That's a mechanical requirement. Okay.
Yeah. And the thing that I see is often cupolas were stepped. They were what you would call a shed roof or a skillion roof, but there might be several steps to that skillion roof or that shed roof. And I don't think it necessarily has to be a gable roof. It could be a shed roof or several stepped shed roofs.
Okay. Anyone?
Well, that's an interesting idea, in that if you stepped them, then you'd also get more solar panels. But I'm sure there's an expense to that. That's not a simple roof to build.
Yeah. Well, the thing for me is the views to the north are pretty spectacular. Right. So if you have a higher plate height on the north side, you really gain those really nice grizzly views.
Yeah, well, I think you'd get them if the windows were 4 feet tall, because you're up high, and it's pretty horizontal at that point, especially when you're sitting. Mm-hmm. 8 foot high windows are pretty impressive in terms of how much light and they bring in.
Yeah,
I mean, I can certainly see why they, you know, wanted to have that more amplified, but I think this is a good compromise for scale.
Yeah.
And it makes it easier for them to work with the client, right? Because they can't make the cupola work, is what I understood. Derek, did you want to add anything?
I don't really have anything to add to what's been said.
So do you think it's a good idea regarding scale to reduce the height?
I think it's a good compromise that the applicants seem willing to make. So yeah, I think it's good all around.
Okay. Who haven't we heard from? Sam or Piper, do you have any comments?
I first of all was so impressed. I don't know when we've had an applicant that has presented the kind of detailed drawings and things they did. I was very impressed with that. And I think Dale really hit it right on the spot when he suggested lowering the roof line of that addition on the roof from 10 to 8. So I'm very happy with what they've come up with.
Right.
And I'm also...
Oh, go ahead, Terry.
Yeah. I'm happy with it too. I think it looks good. And I like the way it was originally, and you know, and then even that taller roof, but I think bringing it down will help. So I think overall it's pretty good.
And aesthetically, it sounds like a good compromise, because you're still keeping the lantern effect, as Chris called it, right?
Right, yeah.
So Piper, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I think it was a good presentation. I think keeping it symmetrical from the eastern elevation is a bonus.
Yeah.
And, you know, lowering that plate height is great. And I think I thought it was it's a great design. To be honest, I will say that the linear elevation from the looking to the south from the north doesn't bother me. But I understand the concerns with having two cupolas or that effect.
Yeah.
You know, having some impact on the design.
Yeah.
So is there anyone wanting to make a motion regarding the recommendation? Because it sounds like people are in favor of it with the change.
I would make a motion.
Okay.
That it be approved with the reduction of the plate height to 8 feet.
With reduction of, it's the plate height is what you call it?
Yeah, that's the...
the top.
That's where the roof structure begins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Basically the wall height.
Yeah. Oh, is it the wall? So yeah. But it's with reduction of plate height from 10 to 8 feet. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Any second for that?
I'll second that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Do you feel like voting?
Absolutely.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yeah. Is there a way we can make some kind of, give them some kind of, this applicant, some kind of commendation for their exceptional present? Like, really, it's so far, and Sam made the same point. It's really incredibly good work. Wouldn't you say so, Maria? And Derek, is that people?
Yes.
So maybe we can say...
well, there's always historic preservation awards.
That's true. That's true. We can keep that in mind for sure.
Yep.
So now, what's that? So that would complete that item on the agenda, correct?
Yes.
And then we move to, the more pressing issue is we have quorum problems. So we're wanting to open a conversation about membership and attendance. And Maria and Regan, you gave us information in this packet about the membership and everything. Did everybody get a chance to look at that at the back of the packet? 9 voting members is what it calls for. And
yeah, so you've had 2 vacancies. Tom Giordano resigned in February of this year, and I know Ellen was even before that.
That's right.
So I think you're getting close to a year where you've had 2 vacancies that haven't been filled. So I think that's part of the issue in terms of when you have 9 members, you have to have 5 for a quorum. So staff is suggesting you reconsider supporting an amendment, to suggest to the council that it be reduced to 7, because it seems like this commission, and I think many commissions, are struggling to fill those vacancies, but you do really important work. So that way, if you had 4 members, you could have your meeting. Getting the 5th when you only have 7 people seems to be the challenging point.
So do we have 7 now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. I was wondering who you wanted to throw off.
No, I don't think
no,
so.
No. Yeah.
It's because that's been the issue the last 2 meetings, is we only had 4 instead of 5.
Do we have the power to change that?
Well, no, it would be a city council decision, but I think if, we can draft the ordinance, and if the historic commission was wanting to look into that further, if that's a possibility, we could, Council Moran's here and he's hearing this, but we could also introduce the idea. I think there are about 16 city commissions now, and I think there are about 5 that have 9 members in addition to the historic commission. So the majority have 7 or less. Many have 7, like the planning commission has 7.
So it's the norm, more of that.
I mean, some are quite small. Some are only 4. I think tree commission is 5, because years ago they had the same sort of issue with having enough members to have meetings. So, and with your quasi-judicial role, it's pretty important to be able to have meetings, because we have applicants lined up. And the downside is we can't hold up their application, their planning application, if for some reason the commission doesn't have a meeting. So when that happens, then the historic commission review by this commission doesn't happen. You know, we have timelines in state law that we have to process applications and keep them moving forward. So this year has been busy in the planning and building department in terms of number of permits, but we just haven't seen as much in the historic district lately. That doesn't mean that it, might not pick back up, and that review of planning actions could become much more, regular thing.
Right. Is there anyone that has a concern about reducing the number of commissioners?
Well, I like the idea that we have this depth of experience when we have 9 members. we can broaden our view. I like the idea of having, I think typically we have people who are in the trades. In the trades, yes, in the architectural business or in the building trades and so on. And I think when we've broadened our experience, I think particularly with Beverly, we've brought in somebody with administrative experience and a lot of other, just a whole nother depth of experience. And so I like keeping the committee large, and I like encouraging diversity on the committee.
Do you think reducing the number would necessarily reduce diversity?
I don't know, but I think the more of us there are, the more diverse views we have.
I would have to chime in and agree with Bill on that. My concern too is with, you know, I think that we've been really impacted by the whole COVID epidemic. And so that, I think that's really crippled us in getting people to come out. I'm hoping that if we could recover from this and encourage more participation, because I know that, you know, I've kind of pulled back in my life.
Understandably.
Out in the world. And I still think there's people that I just have failed to call. I'm sorry, I meant to call a few people that I thought might be interested, because I think 9 would be better too. But I really understand the difficulty with me not being able to come last month and screwing things up. You know, it just, we're so susceptible to to having to cancel meetings, you know, because we have fewer people. So I think I see the importance of, you know, maintaining our quorum, but I agree with Bill. I think that the 9 is really a good number for our group as far as decision-making and sharing the workload, because when we go back to doing Thursday afternoons, it's really helpful, you know, for people like me that are still working. You know, I can't, you know, volunteer as much during the week as I might like to. So, I mean, having that that group support, you know, and a little larger thing. So maybe if we take it up next year and try to see if we can, you know, come up with some new membership. But I do understand the importance of maintaining the quorums, but I'd like to continue just a little longer to try to get a few more people, you know, to join our group. Well,
and this is the first time we've really had the discussion about vacancies, and that
this is the second time.
We had a vacancy.
I just want to remind everybody that you had the same exact conversations about
that's
over
true.
6 months ago, and you all said the same thing, and nobody was recruited and no vacancies were filled.
So it's time to step up.
I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but when staff puts together an entire packet and applicants are poised to come in front of you and the meeting gets canceled a day or less ahead of time, it's inefficient because of the loss of staff time. And we put packets together, we post meeting notices, we send out Zoom meeting links. We're talking to applicants, and then I had to call those people last time and tell them, sorry, we just had to cancel it the day of the meeting. So I don't think it's a question of resources and preparing for the meeting, but it's also more than public perception in terms of, you know, customer service to those applicants.
Right.
I think it's a negative public perception. And I should have counted. I know it's happened at least twice this year, if not 3 times, that we've had that happen, where we put together packets and everything was done, and then we had to cancel it the day before the meeting.
What challenge would you give to us? I mean, would you say you have a month to find those people that are going to be more diverse, bring diversity?
Well, the appointments are next April.
Okay.
But you really need to start talking to people now so that they put in their application, and the mayor has those applications in front of her for appointments next spring.
So the council is acting on the appointments in April, right? I'll get right to you, Dale.
Yeah.
Okay. And Dale, did you want to suggest something?
I think you're muted, Dale.
I agree with what Maria just said. We have been trying. I've been trying, and there's just not an appetite for it now. And I was going to ask Maria about how many other commissions are not being able to hold meetings because of not having a quorum. Or are we the only one?
You know, I don't know. I'd have to look into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what's different about the Historic Commission, Historic and Tree Commission, is that you have that role of reviewing planning applications.
Right.
Not that other commissions' work isn't important, but that's, you know, that has state law tied into the timelines and the review process. So it's always, you know, I think been considered a very important and valuable role the commission plays in that regard.
Are these guidelines something of a CLG requirement or state requirement?
No, that's state law. It's part of the statewide land use planning system, you know, that we have to, there's quite a much of it is outlined in state law, but the one you probably hear the most about is, you know, we have to process all applications within a maximum of 120 days.
Right.
So when you have things that are bigger projects that are going to a public hearing at the Planning Commission, that sounds like a lot of time, but that actually, we always have to be keeping in mind appeals. So you can tick through that 120 days very quickly for something that requires a public hearing and then is appealed.
Yeah, I think it's a total drag that we've had to cancel meetings. And I'm wondering if there's any flexibility in an ordinance where we could adjust on the fly even, rather than setting it at, I guess it needs to be an odd number. Is that true? Are they 5, 7, and 9?
I believe so.
Would make sense that you'd have that because we don't have a mayor to break the tie or something. But
they're actually, the Tree Commission does have some language, and I believe it's only in the Tree Commission's setup that the quorum is the number of seated members rather than total members.
Well, is that an option for us?
I don't know. We'd have to look into it. I don't know. I mean, I know that's only the Tree Commission, so I don't know if the legal department administration, ultimately the council, wants to go that way. That would be one question. And then also kind of doing a little more research into if other commissions are having the same issue.
Yeah.
So that seems like it would be a good solution for me anyway. Like, I feel like a larger commission is better, but having a quorum of seated members would certainly solve the problem.
And it would allow, I mean, if we go back to the review board, as Keith mentioned, it would be helpful to have more board members. So, but I think, is that an option we could act on fairly soon, or is it going to take a while for research, do you think, Maria?
I think it's going to take a little while. I mean, there's a lot of people who are involved in administering commissions and appointment to commissions, right? And, you know, it involves the city recorder's office, obviously the mayor's office. So it affects more than your commission, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, it affects. Yeah. Oh, right. But what I hear you saying is, in order to duplicate something like what the Tree Commission has apparently introduced into its rules and procedures, if that's been done already, does it facilitate some more speed to get that done?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we just would have to ask. And probably ask multiple parties. So, but we could, you know, staff can look into that.
Oh, Piper.
So,
well, wait a second, Terry. I'll get right to you. You Piper had a comment.
So if we did reduce, can we reduce our design review to 3 instead of 2? Is my first question. Or even, you know, instead of every week, every other week, just to reduce our obligation for design review in person when that, you know, hopefully does come very soon. And I agree with Dale. I think that, you know, diversity is really great on a commission, but only that commission can meet. And right now, it seems very difficult for us to come together and meet for whatever reason. I mean, obviously it's because of the quorum issue, but, and then I guess the other question is, you know, I know what the definition of quorum is, but can we sideline that and say that our definition of quorum instead of 5 is 4, even though we have, you know, supposedly 9 members that we can fill? Can we just change that definition?
I don't think you can. I mean, because we're dealing with a city that has 16 plus commissions. So I think really what you're saying is the same as how Tree Commission is written, where it's the majority of the seated filled positions.
When did the Tree Commission make that change?
I don't know. It's been at least
quite a while.
10 years, maybe 15.
Oh. Yeah. So what I hear you saying in response to Piper's question, though, is it should be more uniform. You can't have every commission deciding what it's.
Well, quorum. No, I think she was saying can change the definition of quorum, which I totally appreciate the creative thinking. But I think it's defined in the Ashland Municipal Code for all the commissions.
Okay, and that's what I'm asking. Section, yeah.
So, yeah.
It has to be uniform.
Yeah.
So I'll just add my 2 cents that I think that us meeting again every single month, if possible, is more important than having 9 members. And I have, you know, shake the shrubs and beaten bushes to find people to come, and I haven't had any takers. So, you know, even beforehand, trying to get other people involved, it's been an uphill battle for sure.
So it looks like we should be realistic about it. You know, like you said, nice to have 9, but if we miss meetings,
right, we
have to, you know, just go with the 7.
So is there an emerging consensus here? Bill and Terry? Oh, no, sorry, Bill and Keith. Yes, Bill and Keith. I know who you. So we don't want to go back and forth with a number either. And I just wonder if how we best proceed to give flexibility.
So I see 9 as giving us more diversity and also giving us more depth. But the problem is filling those positions right now. And it was not so much of a problem before the pandemic, but it certainly is a problem now. Like, there's nobody I know who wants to become a member.
Should we stall for a few months to see how it goes, you know, to study some more?
And there's always the making a pledge to make the meetings, you know. I mean, yes, Dale.
Well, I think everybody understands the importance. And Piper, you hit it. I mean, it's so important to have a meeting. We can't miss any more meetings.
Right.
It's paramount for the planning process. And so dropping it to 7, we have always gotten 4. And I don't know if there would be a flexibility to be able to move it to 9 if we could get 2 more, but
yeah,
in an ordinance. But I think 7 is the answer, and we'll have, you know, quality 7 that will make the planning process work.
Sam?
I agree. I think right now, I've talked to some people too, and I think I have a couple of people that I might coerce into doing it if we started having, I hate these meetings. I mean, you know, I have to take 30 hours of instruction every 2 years to renew my real estate license, and it's all Zoomed, and I just despise it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I honestly believe that once we can start meeting in person again, we will be able to get people. I think it really makes a difference. But for right now, if we can go to 7, we have 7, I'm all for it.
Be realistic about
Look
it.
Look at all these animals appearing on our screen. Wow. That lightens the mood. But I do hear a consensus that I think Piper put it well. It's like we would prefer to have diversity, possibly, but we can't afford not to meet. Like, and Dale said the same thing. And I really do think this commission is sensitive to the fact of the imposition of work that it poses on staff. And I think what's important in what Maria was saying, and maybe Regan has a comment since she's always the one having to call us. Wouldn't it be important if we gave you, if we had earlier responses to our attendance?
Yeah, like, that would help. I mean, the code says 48 hours notice to, I think it says to the staff liaison and the chair. You're supposed to let them know if you're not going to make a meeting. Realistically, we've already got the packet and all the work done at that point and the applicants lined up. So that it is, if we're trying to not have that happen where the applicants think they're going to the meeting and then we have to cancel the meeting, that's 48 hours is too late.
So, and we always know, I mean, don't we know the next meeting now? What's the next date of the next meeting?
January 5th.
Yeah. January 5th. So what I hear Maria saying is that, well, you start putting the packet together, it goes in the mail a week before our meeting, at least, right, Regan? So
the Wednesday before the meeting is when I mail out the packets.
But that's not, may I chime in and say, that is not the only work the last week. They're working out for a month or maybe 2 months.
Yeah.
So it's just a process that's interrupted. And I would like to make a motion that we have Maria look into getting permission from the city council or whoever the higher ups are that decide that we move to 7.
7 members. Is there a second?
Could I pipe up?
Yeah, up you here? Know what? Can I just say we need a second before we can discuss this?
We don't need a second.
I would like to. I would like to speak on this. I think that I apologize for having missed last month. I feel that this has brought this to a head, but it's timely because we need to address it. But what I would like to see is if we could vote on this at the next meeting and in the meantime, see if we could switch to the tree commission's idea of how to judge a quorum so that we have the flexibility to add, two more members to our commission and have the support on Thursdays when we're back in person. And just give us a little bit more flexibility.
So as an alternative to moving to ask specifically for 7 members, you would be preferring to ask staff to inquire about getting the same policy on quorum that the tree commission currently uses.
Yes, just for an immediate, possible, because either one will take time. So yeah. Why don't we start with the one that gives us more flexibility to have 9 members? Because I think that there's a general agreement that 9 members would be better. It's just that we have to fill them. And again, I have to come back and say that, though my absence last month was more personal, my absence before that was because I was really ill.
Yes.
So again, the COVID has pandemic has had a terrible effect on our whole society and culture.
Yeah.
And I think that that should not be overlooked. And I think that returning to, like Sam's saying, to actual face-to-face meetings will help, you know, bring the interest and the feeling of safety, basically, to be able to come back out in public and gather. So I just think it's important to have the flexibility to have 9 people and but still be able to do our monthly meetings. And, you know, I value that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, you do have a motion on the floor, so you either have to have the motion withdrawn or somebody second the motion, and then you can have discussion.
That's what I was saying earlier, but never mind.
May I ask a procedural question? Does a motion need a second before you discuss?
Usually, yes.
Okay.
So
I'm willing to change a motion and see if that'll fly.
Okay.
That we keep it at 9, but if we can get the tree commission's authority to say that we could have sitting members, that would solve it. Okay. We could even work with 6, right? What happens if we're at 6? You know, somebody, one of us has a medical emergency and they're gone. So now we have 6.
Is there a second for that?
I would second that.
Okay. So then we can have discussion. And I think the motion, you would be also asking staff to look into that, right, Dale?
Yeah.
That they would be investigating that. Are you comfortable with that, Maria?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you repeat the motion?
Yes.
So I understand exactly what the motion is on the. Yeah.
That we would remain at 9 members, mm-hmm. but we would have the option to have a quorum by using the number of sitting members for that meeting.
Thank you.
And that staff will report to us next month. So again, I think the point is to have flexibility, and I agree. And I hope Sam doesn't give up on Zoom before we go down. Anyway, is there any more discussion on that topic, or can we move to a vote? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
You're an aye. Okay. That was a helpful discussion. And I personally don't want you to feel bad, Keith. When you get ill, and thank goodness you got through it.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. My last month wasn't as good of an excuse, I'm afraid.
No,
the discussion, but I won't do it again, honestly.
You don't have to bear all the burden of that. Okay, so now we come to the community center. And I think I'm going to look to staff, to Maria, to advise us what we should be looking to discuss.
I don't really know. I mean, I think it came up a while ago that it was requested that this be put on the agenda after I think the subcommittee report came out and the council moved forward with it. That's been quite a while ago, but so we kept it on the agenda, so it wasn't initiated by staff, but I did talk to Public Works, and kind of where they're at now is they're evaluating whether to put a retaining wall in the hillside or closer to the building, sort of to protect the back of the building. I think they've created a walking path in the back to sort of look at that and evaluate it, and they're still talking to the engineers. And then the request for proposals for the rest of the project that was recommended by the subcommittee went out and was due on Tuesday, and they did not get any proposals. So my understanding is that they are going to redo the request for proposals after the holidays and try it again. So that's in terms of the status, that is the update that I have.
Okay, and that conforms to what, do you mind if I call you Sean?
call me whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, I know. I really walked into that one. I really walked into that one. Gosh. But anyway, Sean told us.
That's accurate. That's accurate. I think the discussion around post, we did not, you know, we're essentially looking for an engineering proposal. So that's been, at this point, shelved until, pushed back until February, I guess, was the time frame.
Yeah, no, okay, February.
So,
well, one thing that that I wanted to make sure Dale has a chance because to talk about it is because it was, you wrote the letter before the council meeting, right, in September? Is that correct, Dale?
Yeah, it was presented at the council meeting at the same time the
right
ad hoc committee was there.
And Dale was very clear about the fact that the commission hadn't met and he was representing his own professional opinion. But I want to make sure, do you have any comments that you want to make going forward?
Well, I think my letter speaks for itself. I, you know, totally disagree with the approach that's being pursued at this point. But I think more than anything, when I asked this be a discussion, it was more for any other members to, you know, express any concerns or just so it's something that we covered because it's obviously a very major move going on here in the city. And we weren't really consulted at all. And so I thought we had to have a discussion about it. Again, you read my letter, so you know my position, and I'd be open to hearing from anybody else. I guess there's a possibility that we could speak as a group, but I'm not sure that it would have any impact at this point. I don't know.
Okay, so could you summarize, as I understand it, I don't know where my notes are now, but when I reviewed it again, is that your concern was the steel moment. Is that what you call it, frame?
Steel moment frame. Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's an interior element. We're supposed to be focusing on exterior elements, but there were changes that could defer other construction issues. Is that as the way I understood? Could you speak to that?
Well, again, I assume everybody has read my letter. It explained that, you know, in more detail. But basically, once you support a building from the inside with a steel frame, what you're supporting is an understructured, sagging roof that has walls that are leaning out with foundation and floors sinking. And all those things will remain in place forever unless you take the steel frame out to repair them in a more conventional way.
So, so as you say, you were talking about trying to take a more comprehensive view than maybe the ad hoc committee was at this point. But are there any other people want to comment on the letter that Dale wrote? Any other concerns? Because I know the action is what I hear Dale saying is, right now, I believe the council is going forward with the ad hoc committee recommendation, as Sean said. And so are there any other aspects of the, reconstructive efforts on the community center that people have questions about, concerns about?
So I wholeheartedly agree with Dale that addressing the building fundamentals is very important. The steel moment frame addresses one issue, and mm-hmm. that's essentially a safety issue. But if you look at the building as a whole, you need to think about a foundation and walls that support a roof that that can carry the loads necessary, the four row loads and roof loads that are required.
Right. And, Sean, is the going forward with the ad hoc committee recommendations, that doesn't prohibit other changes, requirements being looked at or not? What do you think?
I don't know how to answer that. The ad hoc committee, you know, reviewed the issues that were presented previously by Marquis out of Medford, and the engineering structure issues. They outlined in the detailed report presented to the council what they saw as the issues that needed to be addressed. Mr. Shostrom actually did show up at the council. I really wish he would have reached out to me prior to that to discuss it, because I was one of the people from the council that suggested that we look, instead of spending, based on our budget constraints, et cetera, the estimated $800,000 to fix the two buildings, that we could find a more cost-efficient way to get the buildings repaired, make sure that they're safe and open. But that didn't happen. So it was a little bit frustrating to go through that. But, you know, the recommendations, listen, I'm not a architect. I'm not the expert here, and I don't profess to be one. I have looked at this. I have believed in what was said and what could be addressed with the cost outlines that were identified by the ad hoc committee. Mr. Sostrom's main point was an interior issue, which I commented during the city council meeting, which was not something that the historic commission would be focused on. Historical commission would be more focused on the exterior side of the building, which was acknowledged at the meeting. Again, look, I want the community to be able to use this safely, efficiently. I want to deliver this and help deliver this at the most cost-efficient way possible. And I think that is what the ad hoc committee presented and what the council decided to do. So I don't know if there will be any changes. I think moving forward, there's obviously a process that we're going to be going through with various RFPs to deliver what we need to deliver. And, you know, along that process, there'll be obviously hills and valleys to climb. But as far as I know, based on the last vote, on Tuesday, you know, that's the way we're going to be proceeding forward. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that's, yes, I think that's helpful. And so I think Dale's question is still relevant, which is, do other commission members feel like there is anything we as a commission have to suggest to the, or should we, it seems also reasonable to see how the process plays out here. And the next step is to get an engineering company to do an evaluation, right? That's where we're at.
Now, we need to look at the exterior, be aware of any exterior changes. So if if the exterior is going to be impacted, that would be our concern.
And I don't think they will be, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But I think most of the issues addressed were outside of the retaining wall, which again was not put in. It was designed to add separation between the hillside and the building, and also to fence it off to prevent people that shouldn't be back there, who potentially pose a fire threat to not only those buildings but our entire community, from hanging out behind there unsupervised. So that was the whole idea about the exterior. Most of the identifiable changes were interior issues.
Right.
Somewhat off topic, but does anyone know what year, can someone inform me what year this building was erected?
Yeah. The building is individually listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and that was included in your packet last month, that whole nomination form. I believe it was 1922 or the community center. I think they started in 1921 and they finished it in 1922. But the nomination from the National Register goes into quite a bit of detail about the exterior and the interior part of the building. So in the consideration of putting it on the National Register, in terms of what were the prominent historic features, it did cover both interior and exterior. And it's obviously in the Skidmore Historic District, our local district, also historic district.
Did you want to add something? You had your hand up, Maria.
That's actually what I was going to say. I should have said that at the beginning and I forgot to say it. So,
well, so how do people feel? Wait to see how things play out after the first of the year, or or not.
So I think Dale and I would approach the project differently. You know, we do a lot of residences and we rebuild them from the inside out. And generally it's relatively cost effective and doesn't require a lot of engineering. But when you talk about public buildings, they're built to a higher standard. And I think for me, I have to accept the fact that that these buildings need to be built to a higher standard.
Yeah. And okay, would that lead to making any kind of recommendation from the commission?
I don't know. I would defer to Dale because he's been intimately involved with this. But, there are different ways to approach a problem. Yeah. And Dale and I, from our experience, generally approach a problem differently from the way an architect or an engineer would.
Right.
I wanted to ask, too, just to say, I remember reading the letter that Dale sent out and kind of going, oh, yeah. But what was the date? I would like to reread that because I'm just not conversant on what the outline was. What was the date, Dale, that you sent that out?
September 19th.
September 19th?
Right.
And it's difficult to read and ascertain what's going on there. I went over it a number of times and it's...
I think that was what my awareness was.
In the October packet, we had the whole subcommittee report, which showed the design of what the subcommittee came up with.
Maria, I'm sorry to interrupt. Sorry, guys. I have a little family issue I have to leave and deal with. The community center PDF, there's an executive summary, if you will, in the first 9 or 10 pages, which will give you an idea of the key points. Okay. All the best. Take care.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that's what you're referring to, Maria, right?
In the October Historic Commission, I mean, I think it's the same report.
Yeah.
We had put it in your October packet. Is that online, Megan, or not? The October packet?
I think it's difficult to...
Yes, the packets are online.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's difficult to read that and understand totally what's going on. Like, I think I would have had to have walked through the building with Dale and the engineers and those others concerned because it's a complex problem.
That the executive, the ad hoc committee's report is complex?
I think it is. It's a complex issue.
There's a lot of
ways of looking at it.
Interrelated problems. That's true. Dale, did you want to comment yet anymore?
Well, I've been biting my tongue most of the discussion, and I'm not sure how. I guess I'll express that. The original Marcus study was very thorough. Engineering was thorough enough to identify all the issues. And the biggest one is the potential falling in of that roof.
Oof, yeah.
Then the council asked Scott Fleury, or community, excuse me, it's not community, what is it? Public Works,
yeah,
to put out an RFP to find architects who would answer all the questions that Marcus raised in both buildings. Pioneer Hall was very well detailed in terms of its architectural shortcomings, and they also had architectural plans to fix all of it up to a standard of earthquake and fully safety. But the community center just had a structural report. And so what we asked, or what the Public Works asked for an architectural RFQ qualifications, and then we did pick Marcus again to look at both buildings, give us all the things that needed to be done to bring it up to the best of codes and energy efficiency. And then at that point, we would make a menu, essentially, of what to do as a priority, depending on what the budget was. Both of the buildings, you know, are close to $400,000 to $500,000 to fix, to bring up to earthquake and disabled access. And so we were, they brought that to the commission, the city council, I mean, that proposal. We got the estimates. It was $135,000 for that company to go all the way from preliminary design through construction management. It was about $35,000 or $40,000 to do the initial going through, finding out all the issues and putting a price tag on what they might be before they then went to construction drawings and construction management. So for $40,000, we could have learned all the shortcomings of both buildings and the cost associated with it. That vote lost 4-3 because George Kramer came and had a presentation, and he's, you know, a preservation specialist, and said that we just want a chance to have a citizen's point of view to fix this problem and get the thing open. Their charge was do it as cheaply as you can, or they said we're going to do it as cheap as we can. And the solution they came up with was well shown. I mean, the presentation after the next couple of months after they worked and had the engineer and a builder and go through it was a polished, great proposal to add to make this ad hoc committee. The ad hoc committee got full support from the commission. Why not? If we can do it cheaper and somebody else has a different idea, everybody has different ideas on how things should be. So doesn't hurt to do that. But as soon as they chose to do that, and it took a couple, 3 months, Marcus and associates would not have declined. If once that vote was taken, Marcus and company were
wrong, basically.
They declined doing any more for it. And, you know, it's a political football. But the reality is, when you look at the solution, with the steel moment frame, and then it was going to be a straight beam with posts off of it. And then they added a curved beam. Well, that whole roof is not even symmetrical, and it won't fit a curved beam because it's a trapezoid. So it's just ill-conceived. I can't believe that George would just sign his name to it. And So here we are. And the reason for that is that once they gave permission to do that, and people really don't understand it, the city council was split again, and it was tied by the mayor. And I think, you know, Sean said that, you know, there's been a lot of support for it. Well, not really. Nobody really understands what's going on there. You know, I think the vote of the council and the ad hoc committee prevailed. But if you ask citizens what you really want to do, of course you want to open it, but we want to stifle any other changes, both structurally and you know, for ADA, all those things. We're leaving all that behind, and it's just totally short-sighted.
Yeah, I was going to say from what you're saying, it's being driven by a council's interest in reducing costs.
Right.
What I wonder is how the part this is not a planning department project right now, right? It's a public works project. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so I think we've tried, I think you've asked the public works department to come and talk to us about it, but at this point, they would be responsible for the next request for qualifications. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so do you think, Dale, we could get, would it be useful to have public works input on going, you know, needing a more comprehensive proposal, or that's really not possible because the council's already acted?
Right. They let, you know, when, once they voted the other way, they let go of that proposal. And being the city and the way it is and the controversy around it,
people are,
I think, resistant. But I think we have to go through with the ad hoc committee's recommendations. And my only hope is that an engineer with good experience would
recognize,
compare two methods of fixing that roof, and it wouldn't be the moment frame.
Right. Anyone else have any comments or questions?
I think I said it was in the October packet. It was in the November packet.
I was thinking that.
Yeah, it was last month.
Yeah, it's the big one that we...
That's it.
That's my fault. That's my fault. I put it wrong on the agenda. So apologize for that.
Nobody has to apologize around.
I have a question.
Now, yes, Gary.
Are we just discussing this?
Yes, we're discussing whether there's anything we have to do at all.
Right, but no action, really, no voting or
action required. No.
Right. Okay. But just my comment, I guess, is that the aesthetics won't be destroyed, the exterior, in any renovation or, you know, any work that's to be done.
Well, I think the interior will look much different.
But not the exterior.
But like I said, the individual listing covers both the interior and the exterior of the building, and it mentions the auditorium and the stage and the architectural details of the inside. So, I don't know. It sounds like a lot of you haven't looked at that packet or the materials, but you might want to, because they're basically building an exposed steel frame inside of the community center that, correct me if I'm wrong, Dale, but you'll see all of it.
Right.
Or covered in sheetrock, and it'll be asymmetrical. And, it'll be.
But the space is going to be sort of reduced, the ceiling and everything's going to change.
Diminished massively.
That's a negative impact. Also
pretty negative impact, but the issue is whether we have any authority to comment on the interior. Although what you're suggesting, well, it just occurred to me when you've said it a couple times now, Maria, that the register specifically makes note of both the interior and exterior elements.
I mean, it's true that at the local level, the Historic Commission's review is limited to the exterior of the structure. But I don't think that means that the Historic Commission can't have an opinion about.
Okay, well, that's important.
The interior, especially when it's individually listed and you have all this information about those architectural details. So, I mean, I think, Beverly, as where you're going, and I think Dale said it too, it's the city council has made their decision multiple times now. So, it's an awkward situation because no one's asked for the Historic Commission's input. And
can we
to be honest, I don't know if you put something forward at this point,
what impact it would have.
Yeah.
Terry, what
I think we should say something. I think we've always been bold and express, what we feel. So
Well, you have some time now because I think Councilor Moran said they're re-releasing the request for proposals again in February. So I don't know, maybe one one approach would be for everyone to go back and look at that November packet, and if you haven't, and familiarize yourselves with the details of it, and then you could talk about it at your next meeting if you want to sort of submit some kind of formal comment.
And I think we should.
Okay, so
that information, unless you walk through the building, that information is fairly confusing. You have to walk through and see it. To just read it is it's difficult to understand what's going on.
Well, the information you again are referring to that's confusing, that report, the ad hoc.
Say that again.
So when you say that you'd almost have to walk through the building to understand it, you're referencing that information in the ad hoc report?
Right, yes, yes.
And
it's difficult to understand.
I want to clarify, Dale, when you say George Kramer made the presentation, that was it, right?
Well, he made that presentation. It was written. So, yeah, you saw it. And he showed slides and talked it up. And, you know, I think, as Bill says, it's pretty hard to follow for most individuals.
Yeah.
To look at that packet and understand what's going on. Although they did have some simple line drawings showing horizontal beams with an arch ceiling. And they looked terrible. And then they came back with the next, when they came back with their price, then they came back with an arched option. And after seeing how terrible that would look, it was going to block the stage vision of the arch over the stage. But it's still unsymmetrical. A radius doesn't fit a trapezoid, so it would be not symmetrical in an arch. There's just so many things wrong with it. But I understand that it's really hard for the public to understand that. And I think was the council, you know, four councilors or three councilors and a mayor and ad hoc committee of four people, seven people proposed this, voted on it without our community really understanding what it is.
Well, maybe
only that getting open was the and cheap.
So the goal of opening fast is also driving it, you're saying.
And the lowest cost.
At the lowest cost. But it's interesting, what if the role of the commission is to bring more light to this and understanding to this process so that they understand the consequences of the recommendations? I mean, would it be useful for us to go through the facility with you, Dale and Bill, and others, and just look at what we're concerned about and raise those concerns in a way that's easier to understand for the council?
Well, I think, you know, my presentation was shortened to the point where that will fit with the city council's requirements that you might only have 5 minutes or 3 minutes or four. So, there's a lot of material in there, and I'm not sure that the next time if we wrote a letter, we could express our concerns, but you're not going to get much detail in it. And I'm not sure that it would really, I think it's important probably to be on the record. But again, I think the detail would be hard for the public to understand. And then really, how many people really watch those meetings? And
well, I'm actually just thinking of the people who are voting right now.
Well, well, the other three councilors are 100% against what's going on.
Oh,
is my understanding.
No,
they voted against it in every opportunity.
So, right, okay. So, my one question in process with the city council is if you know, you're limited to 5 minutes statements, right? Like the letter, to read a letter. Is that right? I'm sorry, Maria, can you? I'm looking for some information.
I'm trying to remember if public forum is 3 or 5 minutes. I think if they have a really full meeting, they can reduce it to 3.
Okay. And Derek's nodding, so
yeah.
Sounds right.
I was limited to 5, I think.
But my question, is there never an allowance for supporting documentation in addition to whatever statement you're making?
You can submit written information.
Well, that's kind of what I'm asking. If there was a walkthrough and we came up with the most concerning aspects and we took 1 minute to say, we understand the council's action.
I don't know. I don't know if a walkthrough
is a good idea.
Well, I just don't know if
it's going to help.
If it would happen.
Oh, it would. Do we have to get permission?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, I think it, yeah, you'd have to have permission to go into the building and
from the public works department.
I think so. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. I wouldn't assume that's for sure, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When I presented my letter, some of the counselors asked if they could question me about some of the details of my letter. And the mayor rejected that idea because it was public comment and not part of the agenda item for opposing view. And I'm not sure that you probably have to have a city councilor or a number of them to ask for that and get permission for it.
To ask for any kind of a walkthrough?
No, for being able to present a more thorough case, kind of like the ad hoc committee did. They got permission to present. I didn't get permission to have an opposing point of view because I wasn't. I suppose if Public Works had asked for it or something, that could have happened to me.
Any other ideas about this situation or whether to, you know, how we deal with whether we have a comment to make? Because it seems to me this idea of it being individually listed as a national historic on the National Historic Register makes it raise
foot in the door.
Pardon?
It's a foot in the door.
Yeah. It's sort of like it raises its importance.
Right. So I think we should have discuss this the next meeting.
Okay.
And
maybe we can all think about ideas for how to approach it, because I think that Dale's been very helpful in making the reality check of what we're dealing with. And we need to know that. Yeah. And at the same time, we should maybe think more about our role in, you know, speaking on behalf of preservation.
Right. Yeah.
Specific
that needs to be addressed. Yes.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
Well, an old friend to tell me, whatever you do, it'll be the wrong thing. I've got to do it anyway.
And, say that again. I want to make sure I heard that.
Well, whatever you do, it'll be the wrong thing. But the idea is that you should do it anyway. And as a commission, if we don't do it, it'll be to our detriment. You know, we...
Right.
It's so, more important to say what's important, even if it's not through channels or not through the accepted way, or not that the city council would accept what we're doing, but it's important to say it anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, anybody else have a comment on that item? Like Piper, I see you nodding. I saw you nodding.
I agree.
Okay, I think we did that before when we talked about City Hall, and there we decided to go boldly forth or whatever it is. And even like Dale said, we maybe should go on the record, but who knows what can happen. So I think the recommendation Terry was making is we've probably exhausted this subject, but there seems to be a consensus towards looking at making a statement about on behalf of the commission and have that on the agenda if we could next time.
Right.
Sound okay to everybody?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then I think we can entertain a motion to adjourn. Yay. Okay.
you have the power.
Yeah, oh, I can say. Good. Oh, I can just say, well, don't I? Is there a motion to adjourn is what I said. There is a motion to adjourn?
I think there's only one person who really has that authority.
Oh, really? Okay, well, I move we adjourn. It's been very nice to converse with everybody.
And wonderful job. Wonderful job, Beverly.
Good job, Beverly.
Good job, Beverly. There you go.
Oh, you are so nice. Thank you. And thanks to the staff. And I really do want to emphasize how important it is that we let them know early that we're going to be at the meeting. Just so
yes.
It's life easier for them. And you guys do stellar work. And thank you for everything you're doing for our commission. So you all have a good rest of the evening.
Great. Thanks, Derek.
You all too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye.
No.
Thanks, Maria.